That is the drum of a pileated woodpecker, thanks to the Cornell Lab of Ornithology for that. We're talking about backyard birds here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The pileated is our state's largest woodpecker. They were nearly wiped out here around 1900 due to habitat loss, but now population surveys indicate they're thriving and expanding their breeding range. What woodpeckers are you seeing in your backyard? Have you made a sanctuary for birds in your yard? What have you done to make your landscape friendlier? We're at 800-642-1234. Carolyn Byers is Director of Education for the Madison Audubon, bringing science to area youth and communities. Carolyn, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what have things been like at Madison Audubon since the pandemic started?
Yeah, we have had some huge changes. So before the pandemic, I was visiting 4 schools and 3 community centers each week. So that ended very quickly before schools even closed. I just felt more responsible than traveling between all those communities. And so in place of that, we've been doing a lot of virtual learning, which sounds like a hard thing to mix, outdoor education and virtual learning. But we still paired with the same classrooms and just did lessons that would get kids outside. And it worked pretty well. But in other areas of our organization too, we canceled our in-person field trips and started offering more virtual naturalist classes. And we have a new blog about getting into birding during the pandemic.
Yeah, I was looking at that, the entryway to birding. So really a kind of a gateway to birding. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, birding is a beautiful activity to do during a pandemic. You're able to get outside where it's definitely safer to be near-ish people. And you can keep socially distant pretty easily while birding. It's relaxing. It helps calm you and ground you and reset you. And birds are just really, really wonderful.
I love looking outside the window now as we work from home and seeing what's out there, because during the day I never used to get those glimpses. But I'm wondering, it's hard for me to identify when it's a quick moment when I perhaps get to see a glimpse of a bird, like they're there and then they're gone, and I have trouble identifying them. What would you suggest?
Well, I would say that you are in good company, because it is really tricky when you just catch a glimpse of a bird. What I suggest is picking a handful of birds that you know live near you, and I can give you a list if you like, but then just kind of learning about those birds a bit, learning the field marks and what their behaviors are, so that then when you catch that quick glimpse, you'll know quickly what to look for, and hopefully that will lead you to an identification quicker.
Kind of like this really fast process of elimination. Which species do we tend to see this time of year in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so our summer sweet is, it's pretty lovely. I'm actually outside right now because my family is sleeping.
You're nice.
And I can hear cardinals singing. I see chimney swifts flying overhead. I can hear mourning dove, robins, blue jays, a red-eyed vireo, which doesn't commonly come to a feeder, but they're still good neighborhood birds. What else? Song sparrows, goldfinches, house finches. There's quite a bit.
So many, and they're so active. We're talking with Carolyn Byers, Director of Education at Madison Audubon, talking about backyard birds and getting at your questions. What have you done to your yard to make birds friendlier and more of a sanctuary? What do you love about watching the skies and learning about birds? What sightings have you seen recently that you want to talk about? We're at 800-642-1234. Georgiana from Milwaukee called in, couldn't stay on the line, but wanted to ask you, do we need to feed birds during the summer? People feed them during the winter when food is scarce. Is there a reason to feed them during the summer?
Well, so first, you don't actually have to feed birds. There's certainly higher populations in areas where people do feed birds, but birds are well adapted to finding their own food, so you don't need to feed them. And during the summer, birds definitely still come to my feeders because it's a free, easy, open buffet, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's no need to feed them at any time.
I think there's also the question, you know, will the birds starve if I take down the feeder? You know, some people are worried that by regularly feeding birds that will make them more dependent on the food we put out for them.
Yeah, that's a good question. Birds have evolved in an ephemeral landscape. So I probably wouldn't remove my bird feeder in the dead of winter when, you know, they've been looking for it for a few months now. But honestly, as long as there's other food sources around, it's not a particularly cold snap during the winter, you could probably stop feeding them. And I am kind of a lazy bird feeder, and my bird feeder is often empty. And the birds come back as soon as I fill it.
And when they're not at your feeder, they're out foraging, right, for other food sources? Like, like what else would they be eating?
Yeah, so a lot of birds that are here year-round are able to switch their food sources during the year. So during the summer, a lot of them are insectivorous. And so they're looking for caterpillars and grasshoppers and other insects. So a really great thing you can do for birds is to make your yard insect friendly, which I know maybe a lot of people might not be excited about, but birds eat a lot of the insects that hang out in your yard. And so by planting native plants and by reducing your chemical use in your yard, you can really make it a bird haven. And birds, of course, will still eat natural seeds. And those are also found in native plants. So if you're planting sunflowers or what else?
What about a berry type plant?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I will admit to being a bird nerd and not a botanist. So I can't tell you the specific species. But yeah, a lot of people bring birds to their yard by planting fruiting plants. And I have a volunteer mulberry tree in my yard that brings a lot of birds around. So those are great options.
Do bird feeders increase the possibility of nest predation, or, you know, keeping a bird away from their nest when their young are there?
Not keeping the bird away from their nest.
Okay.
Birds. So I studied grassland bird nesting ecology during my master's, and I put little video cameras on bird nests.
No kidding. Huh.
Yeah, it was wonderful. But birds spend a lot of time away from their nest in general. So there was one bobolink nest where I counted they fed the babies 158 times during one day. So they have to go and make all those trips back and forth to the nest anyways. Bird feeders can increase predation rates on birds. So if you think carefully about where you put it, so you want to put the bird feeder somewhere that a predator won't be able to hide nearby and ambush your birds.
Like a cat?
Yes, I was just going to say, we're thinking about outdoor or feral cats here. So this is another plug to keep your cats inside or on a catio or on a leash. I have two cats. They are only outdoors when I can supervise them on a leash.
Mm-hmm.
But also you want to think about, you know, Cooper's hawks, and sharp-shinned hawks. Those are pretty common in neighborhoods and definitely prey on birds.
Carolyn Byers is Education Director at Madison Audubon. She's sharing her bird knowledge with us for the hour. Do you love to watch hummingbirds? How often do you see them in your yard? Do you have a feeder? Do you make homemade nectar? What's your recipe? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Carolyn Byers here on the Ideas Network. The song and calls of a Baltimore Oriole from the Cornell Lab. They look so festive with their bright orange and black feathers. I always do a double take when I see them in Owen Conservation Park in Madison on my walks. Do you put out things for your birds? What about orange nectar? How do you track them? What birds are at your feeders now as you're looking out? We're at 800-642-1234. Carolyn Byers is with Madison Audubon answering your questions. She spent many years studying avian behavior, and she's our guide. So, Carolyn, you know, as you see birds come to your feeder, which seeds attract which birds, and what type of seed mix should we put in feeders?
Yeah, there are a lot of good options. And actually, on the Cornell website, there's a Project Feeder Watch webpage. It's a really fun citizen science program that you can get involved in. I should say social science program, not citizen science. But anyways, there's a lot of great resources there about bird seed and what kind of birds you can attract. And the most common seed to put out is black oil sunflower seed, and that will bring in cardinals, chickadees, finches, and sparrows. That's what I put in my feeders.
Because it kind of speaks to a range of birds that would appreciate it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also easy. You know, it's not live mealworms. and it's also, it doesn't attract squirrels like peanuts do, although they certainly love the black oil sunflower. So it's a nice balance for me. I also put out suet feeders. They're not so great in the summer because they're hard to keep clean, but the rest of the year I have suet out, and that brings in woodpeckers and nuthatches too.
How often should we be cleaning our feeders?
Yeah, so bird feeders can become a point of disease transmission if you don't keep them clean. And it depends on your feeder. You know, if it's getting pooped all over and it doesn't have a good roof on it, and plenty of good feeders don't have roofs, but you just have to clean them a little bit more frequently then. So it could be anywhere from, you know, once a month to more frequently, depending on what it looks like it needs.
And so when you clean a feeder, would you like take it inside and wash it in the sink with some, you know, mild dish soap, or can I hose it off?
I'll give you another non-answer. It kind of depends on what it looks like.
Okay.
I mean, if it's pretty dirty, I'll bring it in and give it a good scrubbing, but I might just blast it with the hose.
And then make sure it gets nice and dry before you refill it, of course, with some
definitely
seeds. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if your seed happens to get wet in a storm, you also want to change the seed out, because if it gets mildewy or moldy, the birds won't like it as much, but also it can be bad for them. So keep an eye on your seed.
Yeah, and then sometimes it can kind of get lodged up there. They can't get at it. and, you know, bird seed can also get really messy. How do you prevent seed spills, or you just let it go?
I let it go. and, you know, occasionally I'll rake it up and try to clean up the bottom. But they also sell pre-hulled seeds, so it takes most of the mess away. It's a little more expensive, but if you're really bothered by the mess or are unable to clean it up, that's a good option to use.
We're talking with Carolyn Byers, Director of Education with Madison Audubon. She's particularly interested in nesting ecology, chick development, and foraging behavior. Taking your questions about birds, what's your favorite seeds to feed birds in your backyard? Which ones do you find to be the most effective? Do you feed your backyard birds nuts? Which ones are working? Are squirrels attacking your feeders? Join in at 800-642-1234. Carolyn, what do you do about the squirrels?
I embrace them. there are a lot of people with very strong feelings about squirrels one way or the other. I have a toddler who has named all of the squirrels David Pooh Bear, so we embrace them. But there are ways to try and keep squirrels away. So there are certain types of seed, like thistle seed, that squirrels aren't as interested in. Same thing with, oh gosh, you can toss a hummingbird feeder out and a squirrel won't bother that. But you can also adjust your bird feeder itself to be something that squirrels aren't as likely to target. Some tube feeders have really narrow perches, which exclude larger birds to some extent and squirrels to some extent. You can also put baffles up or put them on really tall metal poles with a nice metal slinky on it that can deter squirrels for a little bit.
I mean, they can do incredible acrobatics to get at our feeder. I'm just amazed by what they can do with their bodies.
It's impressive. And some people set up squirrel obstacle courses. You can look those up on YouTube. They create a ridiculous path for the squirrel to get to the bird feeder. So I think it's more fun to enjoy the squirrels.
We know that birds have dealt with a lot of habitat destruction in the past and even ongoing. Mm-hmm. And the Cornell Lab says 50 million people in our country purchase billions of pounds of seeds to feed birds. What kind of impact is that having on bird populations?
Yeah, I think we might have read the same article. So do you want the long story or the short story?
Just let it go. Yeah, let's hear it.
So the Cornell Lab, they do a lot of really wonderful science. And there's two social science programs that they looked at where people in the U.S. and other countries are collecting data on birds. And you can do this, too. It's free and open to everyone. But they looked at Project Feeder Watch, which is where people look at their feeders and record what birds are there. And they also looked at the Christmas bird count, where people go out during a week or two around the holiday season and they just count every single bird they see. And so they figured that if feeders were impacting birds, those birds that were counted during Project Feeder Watch, would their populations would be shifting in some way. And they were using the Christmas bird count data as sort of a control because those were not birds seen at a bird feeder. It was all birds. And what they found was that the birds in Project Feeder Watch, their numbers were increasing. So bird feeders were helping those bird populations, which is wonderful for them because a lot of bird populations are just in need of help. And the troubling part of that data is that the birds that really need our help, the shorebirds and the wading birds and grassland birds, they're not really coming to our bird feeders. So it's a great thing to put bird feeders out, but it's not the only thing we should be doing for birds. Other birds need help, too.
Yeah, how do we help the birds that are endangered or are in decline?
Yeah, habitat protection is a really important piece of the puzzle. Climate change is going to be a really, it's going to impact birds in a tremendous way. And by protecting as much habitat as we can for them, we give them a stronghold, a place to hang out and hold out until we see how climate change progresses, and it will give the birds a chance to evolve along with it, hopefully.
I used to talk a lot with Texas's ornithologist, and Cliff would always tell me, you know, don't worry so much about the feeder, but work on your habitat. Make sure you can build the best habitat you possibly can in your yard or in the areas that you go to. And so he was just really, really focused on habitat creation and less so on what we're putting out to feed the birds.
Yes, and that's really important. And National Audubon Society has a really wonderful webpage on native plants, and you can type in your zip code and they will spit out a whole list of plants that are native to your area. And then you can also select which birds you want to attract or help, and it will narrow the plant list down further. So it's a wonderful resource for people thinking about adjusting their landscape.
Oh, yeah, really good tool. Tom from Cedarburg called, couldn't stay with us, and Tom does calls to birds, which a lot of people don't know you can do. He said he calls to them, and they respond, and many of the birds remember him and call to him when he returns home. Wow, what do you think of that?
I think that that's pretty fantastic, but he should be careful. So a lot of times when you call to birds, they're calling back as a territorial response. And I mean, he might have a special relationship with his birds in his yard for sure, especially if they're calling to him when he comes home. But I know that scientists, if they're out in the field doing research, there's really specific protocols for how you can play a bird call to get a response from a bird, because it is, it's something that can stress them out if they think there's an intruding male in their territory and they're going to be responding to it, they'll be neglecting other things. So it's okay to call sometimes, just be really aware of how frequently you're doing it.
Yeah, what if you mimic the sound that the bird is doing?
Same thing. So
Yeah.
I mimic owls, and I lead owl prowl field trips where we go out and I use my voice to call for a bird. But I also am very cautious about, you know, only doing it once or twice during the field trip and not doing too many field trips back to back in the same place because I don't want to stress those birds out.
Carolyn Byers is with the Madison Audubon. She affectionately calls herself a bird nerd. We're embracing her expertise this hour, taking all your bird questions and sightings. Do you have birds in your yard that are bullies? Which birds are causing you issues? Have you been able to fix the problem? What worked? What do you wonder about the ways birds communicate, they mate, parent, play, and experience the world? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Carolyn Byers right after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. That is a rufous hummingbird. We might see them at our feeders and in our gardens. Their call is thanks to the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. According to the state DNR, rufous hummingbirds are rare. They don't show up regularly. It's the ruby-throated hummingbird that is the only hummingbird species our state sees regularly. What hummingbirds are showing up in your yard? What do you want to know about making nectar and attracting them? How do you help them fuel up? We're at 800-642-1234. Carolyn Byers is Education Director at Madison Audubon, and she stays with us. Carolyn, let's talk about hummingbirds. They're such a fabulous sight when we catch a glimpse of them. Can you tell us about their behavior and their feeding habits?
Yeah, hummingbirds are fantastic. They mostly feed on nectar, which they can get from feeders or flowers. But they also feed on some insects. I've watched them picking insects out of spider webs before in my garden. And so that's a really fun thing that I didn't know to look for until I saw it. So
oh,
keep
wow.
an eye out for that. They're also very territorial. So you can see males sparring with each other over a feeder or over a nectaring plant that they're guarding. So they can be quite feisty.
Why are they attracted to nectar?
Well, it's a really good food source for them. I mean, it's pretty much straight sugar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have really high metabolisms, and they need a lot of fuel throughout the day to keep their bodies thriving and surviving. And they go into a torpor on cool nights, which lowers their resting heart rate and their just the speed that their body works at, so that they burn less energy and make it through those cool nights.
I've heard so many different recommendations on how we should make nectar for them or, you know, buy the lowest cost grape jelly that you can. I mean, how should we approach putting out nectar? What would you suggest?
They definitely need something that is all natural with no dye. So they are attracted to the color red, but your nectar does not need to be red. In fact, they go to other plants that aren't red, too. When I put it out, I make my own nectar and I take one part sugar to four parts water. I just boil it, I stir it, I let it cool, and then I fill my feeder with it. And it works really well. The only tricky thing is you have to clean it pretty regularly because if it's a hot, sunny day, that sugar can go bad pretty quickly.
And that is so simple to do. It's really, it's just sugar and water.
Yep, that's it. It's like making Kool-Aid without the Kool-Aid packet.
So what types of hummingbirds do we see here in Wisconsin?
It's honestly mostly just ruby-throated hummingbirds.
Okay.
You might see a few strays during migration, but those are really rare and they cause quite a stir. So if there's a hummingbird that's not a ruby throat in Wisconsin, it travels pretty quickly through the birding community and everybody knows about it.
what are some of the pass-throughs? What do move through Wisconsin?
Oh gosh, you know, I don't even know. It's usually things from out west that just seem to have their compass a little skewed, and so fly east instead of north or south. Storms could also blow them off course, but they're birds from out west.
And when do we normally see the ruby-throated hummingbirds?
So they show up later in the spring because they are a small bird that relies on a lot of nectar to get through the day. So probably late May, early June. And I could be a little bit wrong on that. I'm a sparrow nerd for sure. but you can check eBird to look at when those birds start showing up in your area. And eBird.org is just a website where birders report sightings of birds, and anyone and everyone can look at the data, including scientists. And then those hummingbirds stay around all summer. They nest here in Wisconsin, and they also nest in people's yards, in neighborhoods. They're a neighborhood bird for sure. And then they hang out through the beginning part of fall. And some people worry that leaving a hummingbird feeder up will hold them to your area, and it might prevent them from migrating. And that's not the case. So you can leave your hummingbird feeder up as long as you see hummingbirds using it.
And you said that they're territorial?
Yes. I mean, most birds are. And hummingbirds they'll guard their nectar sources. I'm not sure about whether or not they guard their territory boundaries per se, but they definitely guard nectar sources.
What about putting out chunks of orange slices?
Those are more geared towards orioles.
Okay.
And they definitely attract lots of orioles, especially during the early spring.
Is that, would you suggest doing that, or should we just stick to the seed?
Oh, you can put fruit out for sure. Fruit and mealworms. You just want to make sure that the fruit you put out has no preservatives in it and is, you know, as close to pesticide free as you can get it. Definitely wash anything you put out there. But yeah, that's a great way to increase the diversity of birds you have in your yard, putting out different types of food.
Besides the nectar, what are other ways to attract hummingbirds to our yards?
Flowers, for sure. I have bergamot or bee balm in my yard that hummingbirds and bees and wasps all love. I also have some scarlet runner beans, which produce a dried bean, but also really beautiful flowers. They're bright salmon colored, and my hummingbirds love them.
Oh, wow. We're talking with Carolyn Byers, who studies avian behavior, loves sharing her bird knowledge with the Madison Audubon community. She's fielding your questions throughout the hour on birds. Do you feed your backyard birds? What is in your bird feeder? What are you noticing in your yard? And how have you created a haven for birds in your backyard? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. What can you do from, you know, keeping nectar from going bad due to the hot summer weather?
Mm-hmm. You just have to change it frequently.
Okay.
You can also put it in the shade. That helps a little bit. But it's really like every 4 days you need to change and definitely clean in your sink, soap and water, your hummingbird feeders. They're pretty high maintenance bird feeders, which is why I don't often put them out. But I know a lot of people love their hummingbirds and the work is worth it to them.
What are some critters that get into hummingbird feeders?
Yeah, a lot of people have trouble with ants and wasps, sometimes bees too. And there's a few things you can do there. Changing the nectar frequently helps. Making sure your hummingbird feeder doesn't leak is also pretty helpful. And there's some fancy things you can find in stores or buy online, like that the feeder has a little moat around it to keep insects out, or at least the walking ones. So some of those things help keep those critters away.
Tom from Elkhorn asks, I saw a hummingbird fly into a boxwood shrub in my front yard this week. Is this where it's nesting? And if so, can you describe their nesting habits?
Yeah, so it could be nesting in there. It could just be perching. So you'd have to take a closer look, maybe not peering right into the tree, but you could see if they're returning there frequently. So they are, their nests are tiny, 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 like the size of a golf ball. And they use some spider webs to hold their nests together, and they cover them in lichen to make them look a little bit more camouflaged, like tree bark. And so hummingbird nests often just look like a knot on a tree branch. And they, I believe, nest only once during a season. They might re-nest if a predator disturbs their nest, but they don't bring off multiple clutches, as far as I'm aware. And they usually have two young, and they feed them nectar.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do we know about how they care for their young?
I'm sure scientists know more than I do. I study sparrows for the most part.
Come on, you didn't have a spy cam on the hummingbird nest?
Oh, no, they're not really grassland birds. But you can find really lovely footage of hummingbird nests online. So I encourage you all to go out and do some Googling, find some hummingbird nest videos.
What are some of the more common bully birds that we'll see in our backyards during the summer? Are there some birds that aren't really nice to other birds?
Yeah. So I think all birds are pretty cool, and all of their behaviors are unique to themselves. You know, birds aren't, we talk about bullies as humans are bullies, and, you know, there's some maybe malicious intent behind that. Birds are just trying to get by, and they have different behaviors. But there are birds that are more aggressive, more dominant, and will kick other birds out of the bird feeders. And people tend to think of grackles and starlings and red-winged blackbirds as the bully birds. And I think they're pretty cool. I enjoy it when they come to my feeders. But if you want to try excluding them, again, it's kind of like the squirrels. You can try changing up your bird feeder. There are feeders that don't accommodate larger birds very well. You can also change the type of feed you're feeding. So most of them won't come to a suet or thistle feed. And those are some of the better techniques. And if you want to try taking your feeder down for a little while and then putting it back up later, or putting it back up in a modified way so that it might be less attractive to them, that's a good way to break the cycle if you've got a big flock of those birds coming to your feeder every day and cleaning out your feed as soon as you fill it.
Oh, those rascals. Carolyn Byers is our guide this hour. She's a bird enthusiast with Madison Audubon, education director there. Are you a birder? Which birds are your favorite to see in the summertime? Do you have questions about feathers or colors, patterns? What do you think is the most visually striking bird? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Carolyn Byers right here on the Ideas Network. It's a morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation now with Carolyn Byers. She's Director of Education for Madison Audubon. Let's take a call. Perry is joining us near Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Perry.
Hi, good morning. We moved up north to Arkdale area for the wildlife and everything, and I just throw my sunflower seeds on the ground and a nut mix for the blue jays and everything, and Lord knows we've got hundreds of them. That's really working out, but I was just wondering if that's a bad way to feed them, or...
Yeah, Perry, thank you. Carolyn, what do you think about just tossing that seed out on the ground?
That is a perfectly fine way to feed the birds. You can, there's so many ways to do it. Yes, go for it. There's a lot of ground foraging birds that won't even come to a bird feeder. So you're definitely more likely to get sparrows and juncos foraging on the ground. Same thing with mourning doves. And they likely won't even come to a feeder. So tossing food on the ground is a perfectly fine way to feed the birds.
Let's touch on woodpeckers. I see so many, and that must be because our trees are really great for them. How can we welcome them into our yards without the number they do on our siding?
Yeah. So I think it's good to figure out why the woodpeckers are interested in your house. And there's a few different reasons. So woodpeckers, they drum to attract a mate. So when they're making that really loud noise, like you played at the start of the segment, that's to attract a mate and to defend their territories. They do that rather than sing. And so if a bird is drumming, they're not looking for food. It's more about territories. And that only happens during the beginning of the breeding season. So that's a really small window of time. But gutters and siding also make their drum louder. Mm-hmm. So they might be using your house as an amplifier. They could also be trying to create a nesting cavity. And if they're doing that, they would be making a really large hole in one place.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's happening, you want to try to evict them before or after the nesting season. And to do that, you would cover that hole and exclude them. But I believe it is still currently, their birds are currently legally protected. And so you want to make sure you're not disturbing them when they have a nest. Also, it's just much kinder to the birds to wait until they're done nesting before you try to keep them out of that hole.
You know, I've seen people put up like CDs or things that are flashy to maybe, does that work?
It does to some extent. So no one thing will work for too long, but changing up your method is a pretty good tactic. So scientists have tested the efficiency of using, a model predator like an owl, or hanging streamers or playing noises, hanging metal pie tins works really well. Those like single use pie tins, because they spin in the breeze. And they found that the ribbons were the most effective. So you would need to make sure they're, the thicker metallic flashy material, and definitely not anything that a bird could get tangled in. But those work the best for keeping woodpeckers away from your house.
Yep, we got the streamers up. All right, check that out. Let's move on to bird baths. Should we think about having one, or what do you think of them?
Again, it's kind of like the hummingbird feeder. They're a little bit of work. You got to keep them clean, freshen that water, make sure nothing's growing in them, make sure, it's not a mosquito breeding ground. But having water in your yard can be a great way to attract birds and other wildlife, especially during the winter. And there's a lot of different varieties you can choose from. Some of them are just a platform or a bowl filled with water. You can also find some that have heaters built into them to keep that water liquid during the winter. I'm also seeing now a lot of people are using these solar-powered ones that make a little fountain in the middle of your bird bath. And I've heard mixed reviews about those, but some people love them. So there's options.
Well, before we go, I want you to talk a little bit about your favorite birds and why they're your favorite.
That's a hard question. And generally I say I love sparrows. And people kind of pause over that because sparrows aren't usually, a favorite bird. They're brown and streaky and small and secretive and sometimes hard to see. But I love all of that about them. I've been birding for a pretty long time, most of my life. And so I really like birds that make me work for the ID a little bit. They're a little harder to figure out right away. And I've also, as a scientist, I've gotten to hold a lot of sparrows while I was doing research and banding them. And up close, they are just magnificent. They're not just brown and streaky. They have olives and golds and all sorts of other colors. I love their beaks.
Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us.
Mm-hmm. It was wonderful being here. Thanks for having me.
Carolyn Byers is Education Director with Madison Audubon. Wisconsin, like other states, has been figuring out this summer that the coronavirus isn't going away. But compared to other states where cases have risen in recent weeks, Wisconsin's path forward is considerably more complicated. Even so, Governor Evers has not ruled out a statewide mask mandate. Sean Johnson reports.
As COVID-19 cases have escalated this summer, there's been a very clear trend among governors. They're issuing mask mandates. Plenty are Democratic governors, like in Illinois, Michigan, and Minnesota. But Republicans are doing it too, like Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb.
Tomorrow I will sign an executive order that will mandate that Hoosiers wear face coverings during specific times and in specific places.
And Ohio Governor Mike DeWine.
Bottom line is we do it to protect our loved ones and coworkers and strangers alike.
In Wisconsin, Governor Tony Evers wears a mask during his live-streamed briefings from the state capitol, and he urges other people to do the same. But Evers says the May Supreme Court ruling that ended Wisconsin's Safer at Home order has, at least so far, kept him from mandating masks.
We're looking at it, but frankly, the Supreme Court has made it very much more complex than what it ever should have been.
It may well be that Evers is stuck. The Supreme Court ruled that his administration exceeded its authority when it unilaterally ordered businesses close earlier this year. Future orders, the court ruled, must run through the legislature. But Democratic Attorney Jeff Mandel says that ruling left Evers an opening.
What the case really did was strike down an order issued by the Secretary of the Department of Health Services.
In fact, the court made a point of noting that it was not ruling on the governor's emergency powers. Evers used those powers to declare an emergency when the coronavirus began to hit Wisconsin. But the declaration expired after 60 days. Mandel thinks Evers could declare a new emergency now, the kind that would let him order a mask mandate.
Just because it's the same biological problem, we're facing it in different ways, in a different context, at a different time.
Another factor that can't be ignored. The Supreme Court's conservative majority is about to narrow from 5-2 to 4-3. That puts the focus squarely on conservative Justice Brian Hagedorn, who joined the court's liberals to support the governor in May. But Rick Essenberg, president and general counsel for the conservative Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, argues there's no legal justification for Evers issuing a new emergency order.
One cannot simply extend those emergency powers in series. You can't simply redeclare the emergency over and over again.
Essenberg says Evers has another option. He can work with the legislature the way the Supreme Court intended. The thing is, GOP leaders, like Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, have opposed a statewide mask mandate.
I don't think we need a mandatory mask requirement simply from the fact that I think people will do what's right. They don't need a government mandate to do that.
But Voss says when it comes to local governments, it's a different story. Speaking to reporters in early July, he said he's okay with places like Dane County or Milwaukee issuing public health orders.
I think local governments are doing a very good job.
In practice, that hasn't always come easy. Winnebago County considered an ordinance last month to give its health officer broad authority to enforce a local safer-at-home order. The Oshkosh Chamber of Commerce and Republican Representative Michael Schrah pushed back, and the county backed off. And at a recent county board meeting, conservatives like Thomas Overston turned out to oppose a mask policy, even though it wasn't on the agenda.
And you can live without a mask. This whole thing is a masquerade.
Others, like William Smith, said masks are about scaring people.
I will not comply with a mask mandate. I will not comply with anything you guys try to pass.
Mask opponents are vocal, but at least in other states, polling suggests they're in the minority. Quinnipiac surveyed voters this month in Florida and Texas, where COVID-19 cases have surged. 4 out of 5 voters favored mandatory masks. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.